All right, recorder's on.
Okay, welcome. Call this meeting to order. This is the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, January 24th, 2019. This is Commissioner Heller speaking. Who else do we have in the room?
Rob McFarland.
Commissioner Ryan.
Commissioner Greenberg.
Commissioner Miller.
Commissioner Tao.
And staff?
Yeah, Mike McCarty.
And David Miller.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. And Commissioner Bovers is not here at the moment. That's everyone. Okay. Next item is to approve tonight's agenda. Is there a motion?
I move to accept the agenda as presented.
Second. Okay. Any comments or changes? Okay, all those in favor of approving tonight's agenda say aye.
Aye.
All right, none opposed. Motion carries. Next up is approval of last meeting's minutes, January 10th. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve as they are.
Okay.
Second.
Second, Commissioner Greenberg.
Just a quick comment. So I was on vacation for that meeting, so I'll just abstain from the vote, but I didn't read the minutes.
Okay. Likewise. Okay. We have you guys as absent. For me, something stuck out. I was curious of at the header what the action meeting minutes is. What is the action part?
It's probably always been there.
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know, actually. Tom prepares the minutes. I can ask him that question.
Yeah.
Generally, when you have action minutes, it doesn't go into a lot of detail about discussion and that sort of thing.
Now, that would make sense because that's my second comment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was just one thing that I know everyone is busy, and I know we don't take notes. It seems like notes are not. Mike take notes or you know, other Jamie takes notes, but the meeting minutes are not really recorded during the meeting, it seems like. So it's probably is challenging to really then listen afterwards and record.
Yeah, we used to provide a lot more detailed meeting minutes, mm-hmm. But then because the meeting is recorded,
okay.
And there's also, whenever somebody provides a specific comment, particularly from the public during a public hearing, mm-hmm. Tom notes the time that was given.
Okay.
And that way you can go to the recording and listen to that.
Yeah, okay. So the recording is kind of fills the gap.
Actually, I'm pretty familiar with this. Under state law, the only way you have to have is a recording. You're not even required to have these minutes. The official records are recorded.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is definitely just boilerplate language. And I know that sometimes they are a little more involved.
Yeah, if any time you, commissioners would like us to add something to it that they feel is significant, you should have had, now's the time.
Okay. That's all.
And one more comment to the policy. It wasn't worth the state law, but I think in small towns, it's good to be as much above board as you can. It seems like when you don't have minutes, you're hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to do a flat or on tape recorder, that seems out of sync with most stuff. So I never have agreed with no minutes. I think this is small town people have rules.
What's the retention period for the recording stuff?
I don't know. We'd have to look up the state retention requirements. We have several years of minutes available.
Yeah. And generally, the regulations for records management are implemented by the city clerk. So if you get to the point where you need to kind of purge some things because they're too old, they do that occasionally. So we generally keep them longer than we need to.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments or changes? All right. All those in favor of approving the January 10th meeting minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ask for abstentions. Yes, except those that were not here. It is approved. Next, we are on to public comment on non-agenda items.
Sure. Michael Thomas, 1231 LaForest Drive, SC. Actually, just listening to a couple comments since Moneyville hearing of many of these, we'll deal with these items in the upcoming weeks. But actually, a comment actually on the recordings. They're often inaudible online.
I make my own recordings as a matter of fact when I come here now. So you have a lot of interference from that. I'm very much in favor. We need more accurate minutes. So please do take care in ensuring that the recordings are maintained, that they have sufficient quality. It can be quite difficult. I know that's pretty low. Couple things I did want to note, picking up on a few city council items and notes and minutes. I have a concern about the change of our branding statement. I noticed there was a discussion of changing our branding from sort of preservation of rural character to more small town feel. And I know one of your past members, Ms. Gildersleeve, I believe, was really, we maintain the illusion of rural character. However, I'm not Machiavellian. I believe we should actually maintain natural character. And so I would be very concerned about dropping rural character from our branding statement. And as you know, I speak often of water. We need water to maintain our rural character. You know, that preserves our verdant fields, our greenery, our trees, you know, the very parks that people want to play in. There's something that was mentioned at last city council meeting, I know this is probably to y'all, is water conservation measures. Having looked deeply at the engineering of this, I'm concerned about any mention of water conservation measures that are really summer watering restriction measures that are just cloaked as conservation to really enable more high-density development. I've looked at the engineering for this. People need water to keep their properties, their grass, their trees. People have large properties both inside the city and in Salal. So it's a concern to me when you start talking about water conservation measures both within the city and being privy to the contract negotiations with Salal as a matter of public record, to jam those things down Salal's throat is not a good idea. You'll get lots of opposition from Salal. I don't feel that we should be restricting water unless it's absolutely necessary. And I don't feel that water conservation measures may be legitimate. It's summer water restrictions cloaked to enable more development because the water is tight. And that's one of my big concerns in that. Lastly, as I also start looking at a few other things coming up, is that the city is in desperate need of additional tax revenues. The city seems to be quite generous in granting permits and very favorable towards drinking and eating establishments. You know, certainly as an adult, you know, we allow people to drink in the city. I think we need to think about tax revenues. And thinking of something not on the agenda, commercial cannabis. We have properties, perhaps near Trucktown, that might be ideal for commercial B&O revenue. And I would hope that we would look at that issue as well as the issue tonight, really kind of what I would end the reefer madness, the hypocrisy over approving additional drinking establishments without really having cannabis in the city. And I'm very supportive of that, no matter where it goes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else on anything not on the agenda? All right.
Scott?
Yes.
Can I make a comment about the minutes?
Sure.
In the past, we have, I can't hear you, the mayor, just for the record. In the past, we have tried to do verbatim minutes, and oftentimes people say, come back at the next meeting, that's not what I said. What I said was this, but yet the tape would show that they actually did say that. So that's why we don't do that anymore. We don't do it at council. We recommend don't do it at planning commission. Verbatim minutes get you in trouble. And then we had a past mayor that would go into the minutes and actually change what he said in the minutes. So
I can see how that can happen. Yeah, and I think it's and hopefully with the new city hall. I mean, there may be actual microphones which would then go into the recording right there. So something like that can help.
This has worked out okay, but I understand Michael said, yeah, that's having all the extraneous noise.
We're hoping as of August, we'll be able to get rid of that.
That's right.
Okay. All right. It's all on you, Dave. Okay, so we'll move on to the next item, number 5, the introduction to the potential development agreement to allow marijuana retail on property on East North Highway.
Yes, Chair and Commissioners, a little bit of an overview first before we go through the actual staff report. We commented that this process would be to introduce the DA to the Planning Commission for discussion. It is a draft. It can be amended. You'll have a public hearing at your February, 13th meeting. And this then goes on, if it is recommended by you, or if you decide to pass it on to council, it'll go on to council in February. If in the event that you want to continue to deliberate on it, we are going to hold a public hearing at the senior center, so you'll have plenty of room for people to be there and comment, and a better atmosphere for recording. And so if you're not done with it, you're not done with it. So until you do get finished with it and complete whatever your recommendation and amendments are, only then will it go on to the council. So we'll go through the staff report, but I think it's important to understand the process and that there will be a lot of deliberation, a lot of chance for the public to, you know, have input on this, which is the way it ought to be. The applicant, Cliff Garrett, is here this evening, and he's proposed this along East North Bend Way, and the addresses are noted in the staff report. It's roughly across from where the new City Hall is, if you want to, you know, just to orient where it is, and the city's neighborhood business zone. Cliff is the owner of Issaquah Cannabis Store at 230 Northeast Juniper Street in Issaquah. One of the things I'll say is just that isn't in your staff report, we've had significant discussions by our city administrator with both the city administrator and Issaquah. We've had conversations with the liquor board. We've had conversations with the city manager in Issaquah relative to their police department's experience. And all of that came out with a very well-run business, and no issues were highlighted for us. We do have other people who have been interested, and we likely will be taking another individual through a PAR, which is our preliminary application meeting, and they're interested at a location in Trucktown. And so, obviously, there's interest in the topic, and we're going to have people coming in, and they're going to need to be vetted. And it will be important as we go through this process to draw out all of the issues that we think are important. Locationally, we and Cliff and I think some of the other folks that are interested have looked very hard at locations which might be closer to the freeway because of volume of business that can be done, not bringing a lot of extra traffic into the city, and some of the impacts that would occur. As you know, any property that has a federal loan on it or is encumbered by federal financing cannot accommodate the use, and there are some lease restrictions. If you look at shopping centers, they have reciprocal easement agreements which say what can and can't go in the center. So when you start vetting the property for a location that would work, it starts to really cut down the opportunities that are available, and that's kind of where we ended up where we are. So it's important to understand a little bit of context there, because it isn't just throwing a dart and saying we'd like it there. It's it takes a lot of research to end up with a location. The marijuana retail is not permitted at this location per our municipal code for the simple reason that our regulations were put in place when the state originally permitted these retail establishments to be located. And since that legislation was passed, the state has reduced a lot of the setbacks from some of the sensitive receptors. We have not updated our code to do that. And one of the reasons we didn't is we didn't want to have a proliferation of interest in areas that would be expanded beyond those that were originally allowed. We'd rather do it according to a development agreement, because it allows you a lot more control. It's like a conditional use permit. You can condition it any way you want, because as you know, it's a contract, and a contract is between two willing parties with consideration they both agree to. So anything that they agree to that we require them to do is something that can be imposed through a development agreement. Important for the commission to know that, because if there are some things that you'd like to see in it that aren't in it, we can certainly provide those amendments to the council. So the reason that we're looking at this location is some of those issues that I've just raised. City staff brought this inquiry to the Community and Economic Development Council Committee on December 18th, as we do with all issues that kind of need the sort of the test of city council policy and acceptance and that sort of thing. And we do that also with, you know, code amendments that we believe are necessary because of situations that have come up in our office. So it's kind of a really good filter to go through first, so that we don't bring something to you and you go one way, committee goes another way, and maybe the council goes another way. So we did go through them. And they basically said, they didn't give any thumbs up or thumbs down in terms of approval, of course, but they said, let's process it, let's get it out in front of the public, let's see what people think about it, and let's move it through the process. So under our code, under section 1827.020, which I believe we've attached the staff report, you have all of the provisions for development agreements. It tells you what they can be used for, how they're approved, and all that sort of thing. So that's really the approval method. It isn't just the typical looking at zoning, looking at the comp plan, saying, hey, it complies or it doesn't comply. It's a particular instrument that allows you a lot more control. The CED committee requested that a draft DA allowing marijuana retail at this location be prepared and considered by the Public and Planning Commission pursuant to the DA process, and that the Planning Commission then would provide a recommendation to the City Council. When you look at the site, there's some things that you do want to look at with regard to impact on properties, traffic, setbacks, improvements that are required, all the sort of things, signage, everything that would come in with it. So what we're doing first is to go through the DA, find out what the D, if it's acceptable, and under what conditions it's acceptable, and then accept a permit application that would be tested against all of these standards. But we've kind of given a first run through, and we do know that, for instance, the minimum setback requirements are being met under state law. So obviously, we couldn't take it forward if they weren't. But under the new regulations, they do meet what those setbacks are at their current location. This is also a phased project. The first phase is to convert one of the existing single-family homes on these properties into the marijuana retail business, followed by a second phase that would construct a permanent multi-tenant building that would have the setbacks up against the street. We're trying to create kind of a design standard that would have parking behind buildings, and try to get some good public space up near the street. Because the street is so wide, we're trying to improve the appearance of that corridor. So eventually, if they're putting a permanent building in, we want them to meet those standards. They would have to relocate. This would have to be done within 3 years, and that they would have to relocate the marijuana retail out of the phase one building, put it into the new building, and it would likely be a multi-tenant building, and there would be other uses in that building. There are a number of things that we'll talk about as we go through this under potential impacts, but what we thought would be a good idea is to say, why should you consider this? What are the benefits in general to the community? One, obviously, is new revenues, and there's some information in the staff report that indicates what revenues are being produced for Issaquah with their store. Their store is closer to the freeway, has a larger population base near it, so it's probably going to be a higher revenue source than this. But we've had extensive discussions with the applicant, and they feel very confident that this would be a very viable business here, and it would produce some significant income to the city. In addition to that, we've talked to them about the potential for additional traffic, since it isn't on the freeway for quick on-off, bring more traffic into our community. Could be a significant amount, and they have agreed to provide a $25,000 a year amount that we could use for overlay street improvements to mitigate for that somewhat. It does provide new retail use in the city. As you know, the City Council recently updated our concurrency ordinance because we have limited sewer capacity, and they prioritized most of the remaining capacity for commercial use because they want a balanced budget, they want a balanced job housing situation, and we've run so much housing through that we kind of need to catch up on the retail and commercial side. So it's important that retail uses are really kind of the predominant use that we'll bring in the next few years before we have our plant expanded. Plant expansion is about a $30 million project. We had a retreat with the staff today, and then last week we had a council retreat, and I think the top priority out of that, or one of the top priorities, is to get that plant expanded. Right now there's a two-phase plant expansion. The first phase, depending upon the bids that will come in February, is anticipated to be somewhere in the, hopefully in the $9 million range, but it could be more than that. And the entire improvement to get more capacity, phase one doesn't do it, phase two does, will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million. So this is a big expenditure. And how we put the financing together is going to be a real trick, and we're working on that. So we want to see commercial uses. This is a commercial use, a new commercial use in the city, and it would encourage additional use when the second phase comes in and you have additional rental space. One of the things we're finding is we've had an awful, we've really kind of advertised to the development community that we have open arms to commercial uses. We'd like to see, you know, family wage jobs. And a lot of people coming in have just run into problems in finding facilities that are in existence that they could occupy, so they'll have to build, and it's very expensive, so we're having problems, you know, getting folks in without having, you know, some pretty strong costs, particularly in the downtown area where you have to build vaults for storm water, and it ends up being very expensive. An example of that is the vault is over $300,000 for the new park and main building, which is under 4,000 square feet. So you do the math, and it tends to get pretty expensive. So we're really trying to push the retail uses and get a balanced budget. We know all of the new occupants of the community are paying plenty for their homes, and they're going to want a high level of service, and that means we have to produce the revenue for that. Additional controls, the DA is a contract between the applicant and the city, approved at the council's discretion following public hearing, and allows the public to comment. It allows the public to have, and the council to have, more leeway on the kinds of restrictions and conditions they'd like to have on the project. Some of those are obviously beyond state regulations, signage limitations, aesthetic considerations, hours of operation, other operational provisions that are unique to this kind of use, lighting limitations, site improvements, and violation of the conditions in a DA can result in termination of the use. I've already mentioned the new commercial uses associated with new retail. Some of the potential impacts that we will look at, and we've looked at some of them now for inclusion of some standards in the DA, and we will look at them more intensively when we have a CEPA checklist and start getting into those things that we need to look at, like traffic, and have a traffic study, and all the things we typically look at. So as we go through that, we'll look at noise, light, traffic, and neighborhood impact, and we're talking about some landscape buffers and some things that early on we know will be needed because of the proximity of uses nearby. We believe it would bring additional traffic off I-90 from customers, so we are going to require traffic impact analysis, as we do with most commercial uses that have a significant amount of traffic. Some residents may be opposed to the idea of locating this within the community. The Planning Commission will have an opportunity to hear from them at their public hearing in February, and as will the Council. And certainly, even though the Council may not advertise as a public hearing, anybody who wants to speak, the Mayor is very generous and makes sure that they're heard. And the Council is very adamant about being able to do that. There has been some good vetting. Number 4 on your page 3 talks about some of the folks that we've talked to. I brought that up earlier. So I think the thing to do this evening is to sort of really get into the issues that the public brings. You can hear from them tonight, see what your issues are. If there's anything that you'd like us to look in further when the actual application comes in, let us know what that might be. If there are any amendments to the draft DA, we'd like to hear that from you. And with that, that's pretty much where we're at. And we do believe that this thing has to marinate a little bit, and that's why we're bringing it to you, just to look at it, talk about it, come back for a public hearing. If you need to go further, we'll do that. And then at the council, there's opportunity for as many meetings as they believe it needs, and before they take action. And there's no action being asked this evening. It's just the opportunity for the plan commission discussion. And that's the end of the introduction.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll go over general questions first.
And the applicant is here tonight to answer any questions, and yeah, it's been really good.
That was in the staff report. One that I had was if there would be a more development agreement at our next meeting, like would there be a site plan that we'll see?
No, we weren't planning to address the site plan with this, because anything that's not in the development agreement would just be subject to our municipal code. So the applicant has not put together their conceptual site plan yet. They don't know the scope of the building and parking and everything. That's to be developed. So there's not a conceptual site plan put with a development agreement. But it will be reviewed.
Yeah, if you want something conceptual, I mean, the new building is where they're really going to have to meet a lot of code requirements. Mm-hmm. But if you would like to have, you know, before you move on to make a recommendation, some schematic drawings, I'm sure we could produce those. And you'd know approximately where the parking's going
to be. Mr. Chair, I think I see everybody's head. Yes,
okay.
Which was on my list.
Okay.
Great.
And I would just expand that to include what will essentially be on the phase one, a home-based business.
Right.
And what does that look like? Knowing what those homes look like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's the site schematic, and then I think there's some more specifics around how that operation would be incorporated into essentially a single family.
Mm-hmm.
Older home with...
So that's the phase one. So you'd be looking for a conceptual with phase one, and then as well a conceptual, high-level conceptual.
That would be phase my two. Request.
Okay.
Yeah, what I'm seeing in my head is trying to understand where it's going to start, how it's going to park, how it's going to, traffic's going to move,
mm-hmm.
Where the building will eventually be sited. Whether that's one drawing or two, I
mm-hmm.
don't care.
Mm-hmm.
What's the area size of the 4 acres of the four lots?
Do you know how large it is?
Overall, it just depends on which lots are specifically utilized.
Four lots that are all the...
All of the lots together, I'm just eyeballing it, probably about 15 acres.
It's not that big.
I think it's 4.5.
Is it
all four?
For all four.
Yeah, that sounds more like it.
They're very narrow lots.
That sounds more like it. Yeah, and there is one of the other things that I think we will be, I'll just let you know a little bit about what we would look at when they come in with an actual application.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to know whether are they going to continue to lease to the Twain business to use part of it? How will the ultimate disposition of the entire acquisition be? That'd be interesting to know. So,
and just process-wise, where I was coming from with that was just for the visual, I think, is what we were all kind of interested, but also under the Chapter 18. 27 that you sent the development agreements, it has at some point there's going to have to be a site plan. It says for the entire project. So I don't know when is that after council sees it?
Well, generally, I hear what you're saying, and we ought to bring you something conceptual at this point.
Yeah.
But what we do generally is because of the way that entitlements permits are processed, DAs go to the Planning Commission. The actual site plan approval is an administrative approval. So the things that we ask for to meet code, to measure against code, whether it's improvement of parking lots, how many spaces, all that kind of stuff, we do that as a staff. But if because of the sensitivity of the use and because of the fact that we're converting, you know, existing buildings in its space and all that, if you want a little more specificity in order to render a reasonable recommendation, for at least the phase one, we're happy to work with the applicant to provide that.
James, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
James, it's safe to assume that we won't have anything to show the public at this next meeting, or on the 13th.
If you want us to have information provided for you, that's provided to the public as well.
Okay.
So we could PowerPoint that and get it up on a screen so people can see it.
That might be a benefit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of the three homes are going to be used for the initial store.
Cliff, would you like to respond?
It will be the home on the 1310, so it's going to be the westernmost most home. It's the one that's vacant out of all of them, so the hope is to displace as few people as possible out of all of these homes. And so right now the proposal is only to eventually knock down two structures and keep the rest as is, but it, of course it depends on what building code requirements my architect and I run into, because then they may have to spill over onto another lot.
There's a 1310 lot. Is that a historic building?
I certainly hope not.
Okay.
I'm not aware of it being a historical building. I can look into that further.
Several of those homes are old homes, but none of those are listed on any city or county register.
So are you the property owner for the entire parcel to be developed right now?
I have it under contract. I'm not the property owner right now, but I would be upon the completion of this development agreement.
But there are people in that still live in the homes.
Sorry.
There are people who.
The 1310, the proposed phase one is vacant. There's no one in that building right now.
But the other ones are occupied.
And all of the other ones are occupied.
And did I understand you to say that your expectation is both during that phase and long term that the other homes would remain residential?
The hope, my wish list is that the adjacent home would get the very narrow parcel. The 1330 would also get demolished, and
right.
that's basically the worst condition structure out of all of them. And so the hope is to be able to leave the 1350. The hope is to keep the 1350 and then all of the easternmost structures, but of course I don't know how much area I'll need for the phase two development.
All right, I just wanted to speak to the commission. Do we want Cliff to give us some sort of overview on his project first? Do we want to just kind of go through the development agreement page by page, or what?
I think a little preamble by the applicant, something like this is very, is what I was going to think.
Okay, do you have just an introduction to?
Sure, absolutely. So phase one proposal is to take the existing structure at the 1310, convert it to a commercial building. It's a pretty basic home. It was originally constructed around 1920, and it's kind of been added on over time, and it's really not in great condition. And so I think anybody else were to ever purchase this property, they would likely tear it down and build something new anyway. And so the hope is to bring it up to code, convert it to a commercial building, put parking in the back with a driveway that would allow for the parking. The very northernmost part of the lot would likely be used just for stormwater dispersion, and then after opening the store, phase two would likely construct a building right next door on this 1330 lot, and with again parking at the back, and then eventually the 1310 structure would get torn down just because it's not the most beautiful home. It's pretty, I don't have a great idea of the size of the new building. The new structure is somewhere between 2,500 square feet and call it 10,000, just depending on what I can do with those two lots. But it's a pretty pretty basic commercial retail. Yes.
The property behind you is slated to be developed into a multifamily community. Would you be willing to convey to the city a right of way to get from that Watkin property down in North Bend Way for a second house outlet?
From?
I'm talking about, let's just say for this is lot 1330, if that looks to be about 60 feet wide, would that be an opportunity for the city to acquire a right of way or ask you for a right of way for the outlet of that development? You haven't been asked that question, have you?
I think at a certain point the project becomes uneconomic, given that I'm
a buyer. All I'm thinking is this property will be a fire issue. There's only one way in, one way out. Getting a way out on the east end would be a perfect answer to that problem. Like if the city could think about that.
Could even be just an emergency access.
Could be. Probably not. I think circulation would also help that business. But that's packed in the easterly corner. What do you know about oil seepage and all that? What's been going on with that junk that's been sitting there?
I have not done any phase one environmental studies on that parcel right now. If there is any development work to be done on that property, that would, of course, be part of what I'd have to do to obtain any permit.
Well, would you agree that if you're the owner, you'd be obligated to clean it up regardless?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Do you have plans at this time for the 1350 and 60 properties?
Not at this time. Okay. But if I needed more area for stormwater dispersion or needed more area for to be able to fit the phase two building, then the hope would be to develop one of the adjacent.
Are they selling them all as one package? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you could sell them off if need be as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just so the commission knows, just a real quick, we've been dealing with this property owner for quite some time. They brought in a number of, when we took the residential uses out of the neighborhood commercial zone, they are really excited and disturbed about that and wanted to do something. And so we've been running a number of uses. They've been bringing uses in that would be permitted in the neighborhood business zone, and just haven't found anything that works until this use came forward. And our concern over the long period would be to, remove the towing yard use from this area. But they have an existing lease now, and they're operating now under the current situation. So I just see this as the beginning of redevelopment of this area, and as you get newer uses in there, it's going to be a lot more attractive for folks to come in and redevelop it than it is today. But we'd eventually like to see the towing yard out of that area.
I have a question for staff.
Mm-hmm.
So if 1350 and 1360, an option I'm hearing is that that's not part of the phase two plan, it should be left as is. Is that still then part of the development agreement? To leave it as it is, or procedurally, how does that work?
I think that the legal description, since it occupies phase one and phase two, would have to incorporate the properties that would be used for that. So whatever those tax parcel numbers are, addresses are, they would be in the legal description, and they would be the subject of the development agreement. We haven't had an opportunity, because of this just coming up, to sit down with Cliff and talk about, eventual plans for the rest of the property, or to see a site plan for phase two, because it might be that the parking, the traffic circulation issues that are raised along the way would affect that site plan. And if that's the case, it might take in more properties than we think at this point.
So the conceptual site plan is just going to have to be a very high conceptual site plan, because we don't know the context of wetlands. We don't know what the parking demand for this is yet. There's a lot of factors that are going to go into that site plan.
So is retail marijuana, is that a permitted use in the neighborhood business zone? It's not.
No, and the main reason that we haven't included it under permitted uses is because the our current ordinance isn't consistent with state law in terms of where we could locate it. And as I indicated earlier, we believe it needs to be, rather than a permitted use, a use that's only permitted under a development agreement, which allows you to vary from the underlying uses in the zone, as long as you meet the criteria that either the code provides or something that would be equal to or better in terms of what you're conditioning the development agreement to do, the performance of the applicant to meet.
Sure. Could I state that in a slightly different way that I think just confirms what I think we're doing, and perhaps for the record, is that what's in front of us, what we're considering, is only this development agreement and what it's doing, not the underlying code.
Right.
At this time, there's no plan by staff or any ask by council or anyone else to bring forward a review of our existing code to bring it into alignment with the RCWs.
Correct.
Which I'll say might be something for future consideration, mm-hmm. although I hear the caution that, that you're bringing mm-hmm. forward. Thank you.
Yeah, that's something I didn't have time to fully look at. I know there's a few, hinting toward that as far as the law. It used to be just 1,000 foot wherever, and now it looks like 100 to 1,000.
Yeah, it depends on the affected use that they're trying to protect. So there was quite a list, and they took several of those and said you can go down to 50 feet at your discretion, or you can leave it. But there are some uses that you must be 1,000 feet from. And so when we applied that test to this site, with the flexibility that's allowed under the 50-foot receptors, it qualifies, or we wouldn't have brought it forward.
Mm-hmm. I took the opportunity today to walk all these properties, including the cemetery. I noticed that a good portion of the eastern line is going to be against the cemetery. And I would suggest that that's going to be a very emotional issue for people who have family members in the cemetery. I think they're seeing that the cemetery is not even sitting against the cannabis store. We better figure out how we're going to answer that question, because I think it's going to be a very serious one. I also noticed that the mobile home park to the west line is fully occupied, well maintained, and represents a good section of our low cost housing. That might be in risk with the development of retail on that property to the east of the mobile homes, where those mobile homes might go out of the low-income category. Need to be thinking about that. And again, I'll go back to the, I think it's a crucial agreement to get your right-of-way fully 60-foot wide wall right away for not just fire use, but for ingress and egress out of the development. Many years ago, I had an opportunity to have an interest in that property with my old friend Dick Sam. We're looking at putting in apartment, three-story apartments in there. The issue was the big issue, fire access, that basically stopped it. I'm just word of the wise on that.
I guess, Cliff, did you have anything else you wanted to say in general on the project? I mean, there's nothing you have to say, but just...
I hope the concept is clear, the phase one versus phase two, mm-hmm. and of course the intent is to meet all of the building codes in both of these phases, and what I can do code wise plays a large role in what the development eventually looks like. Okay. And so as soon as we have an agreement, then I can get an architect to put a full set of plans together and so on and so forth.
Okay. Where is your operation in this as well?
It's on Northeast Juniper Street, so it's north of I-90, by the new Evergreen Ford detail shop, by the Cabin and Gravel Pit. Mm-hmm. And Minuteman Press is probably maybe one of the best.
And what was the public comment when you were applying for your permit in there?
There's no public comment period. Well, actually, it's an administrative site development permit that I applied for. There was a 30-day comment period. And I believe, this is a while back, because I think I submitted an application back in 2014. And I think I had one comment, and it was from the Lake Sammamish Water District, which has a wellhead right behind the building, and they were concerned about what toxic waste might be flushing down the drain. And of course, it's a retail business. Everything that I bring into the store is all prepackaged, and everything's sold to the public, and then anything that I can't sell to the public by law has to get sent back to the vendor, so I can't even dispose of any packages. And so they were concerned that there is some sort of production that was involved in this retail business, which is not. And I believe that was the only public comment on, because otherwise there's a permitted use in the area.
People in my age range we're about off the city, but I recall, I still have a bias against marijuana, only because I know what it can do if it's abused. And so I would be thinking that in our town, there's probably not many people in the 70 to 90 age bracket that's going to be probably coming up and basically saying, I really object. But there'll be a lot of people in the community that have accepted it and have daily lives with it and use it for medical purposes. And so in that area, you know, I'm an old fogey. I raise my hand to that proudly. But how do we respond to a public that still has the notion that marijuana is not safe for the community, especially a small community with growing families that may have concerns about this particular product being distributed in a small town? How do we respond to those kind of comments?
If I were in your position, I would respond by saying that it's already a permitted use in the interchange area. Unfortunately, there just are very few properties that conform to the 1,000-foot buffers from parks, daycares, playgrounds, schools, so on and so forth. And basically, it's all of the permitted lots are gas stations that do incredible business, and so nobody's going to displace a successful gas station with a marijuana store because you make more money pumping gas, which is why they're all convenience stores and gas stations. And then number two, it's much like any other type of retail business. In a perfect world, nobody would smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol either. But unfortunately, people can purchase cigarettes and alcohol in lots of establishments around the city. And there aren't any separation requirements from schools and playgrounds and daycares and so on and so forth. And so somebody can open up a convenience store right next to high school and sell cigarettes. And that is not the proposal here. The only people allowed in the store are people who are 21 and over. They have to have a valid ID. They are subject to purchase limits, so people can't come in and purchase half of the store and you know, load up a truck and distribute it to people. You know, basically, people can buy a bag full, not for personal use. So I think that the laws right now are very restrictive, and there are lots of restrictions on advertising, signage, and so on and so forth. So I think one would be surprised by how discreet this development will be once it's complete. And I would also urge all of you to visit either Visit Boston or even any competitors out there. And most of these stores are pretty just blend in with other retail establishments.
Give us a quick idea of what the products would look like, or what variety would you have?
I wish I
bring in some samples
for show and tell here.
Come out of the store. What is it?
Yeah, you may want to plan a field trip.
I'll do my own field trip.
Research. I guess to put it in perspective, the maximum quantity of a purchase a person can purchase is an ounce of flour, which is what 60% of people will purchase. It's just the bud that comes off of the marijuana plant. And I
virtually know nothing about that.
Sure. And so it's you know, if one were to just smash it all together, I mean, we're talking like a product that's about this size, and I'm trying to, pretty small. I mean, smaller than a football, but most people purchase just a very small amount at a time, and then people also will purchase edibles and tinctures and topicals. So lots of customers who are 60 plus will purchase topicals to help with arthritis, or tinctures, which are just drops to help them sleep at night. And so we see everything from the landscaper to the C-level executive in the store. And so it's just a really wide range of people, and that really look like everybody in this room.
Sure. Well, sorry to put
you on the spot. That's helpful.
So I have a question.
Sure.
With the development agreement, we're allowed to get into a little bit more on business operation than we would be with, say, just the building.
Okay. Absolutely.
And one thing, you know, social media is out there everywhere. And I saw some comments on one social media site, I don't recall which one it was, but some negative comments about management of the business in Issaquah that then referenced some Yelp reviews, which I went and looked at, and there were quite a few negative ones.
Sure.
Would you have anything to tell us about that?
Sure.
Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Sure. I'm very familiar. I operate three stores. I'm very familiar with upset customers. Just a quick counter to that. The reviews do not paint the full picture. It's generally people will give reviews if they're upset about something. It's much more difficult to get somebody to go and write a positive review, because generally when people have a positive experience, they leave with a smile on their face, they go home, and they consume product and so on. If people are turned away from the door because they have a fake ID and we're not going to let them in, then they're going to say, worst store ever, don't come here. And if you read the reviews, most of those bad reviews have to do with turning away people with vertical IDs. So when people are issued a driver's license or identification card and they are under 21 years of age when they are issued that license, it's vertical. And then when people turn 21 years of age, then they're oriented horizontally. Well, I have a policy. I don't take verticals, period. Doesn't matter if people have reached the age of 21, and that is simply because I want to be 100% certain that we are not letting people under 21 years of age in the store and selling to them. So it's going a step beyond the law. And so similarly, there are other types of identification that I won't take that other stores may or may not. And so I'm probably one of the strictest stores in the state when it comes to ID checking. I also scan people's IDs on the way in. I'm probably in the minority of stores that do that as well. And the reason is because I want a record of who's coming in. It's an all-cash business. And if somebody is threatening my employees or doing something that could endanger people in the future, then I am going to place a ban on those employees. That happens very rarely, maybe once a month, but unfortunately it does happen, and those people are going to be very upset. So there are a lot of bad reviews, absolutely. My counter is that I run a handful of the high volume stores in the state, and I wouldn't be able to run some of the highest volume stores in the state if people didn't want to shop there. And so I'm doing something right, despite what some people might complain about.
Where are you running the stores?
So I have the other closest one is in White Center, in Seattle.
So if someone comes in on their 21st birthday and they have the vertical ID, then
yep.
that might be the mad one.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay. Rob, did you have
a couple
preambles, and then I've got, as you might suspect, questions about specific texts. But I visited the store today, and everything you've said about it, I would agree with. I was scanned in and scrutinized and made me curious what you said about the scan, because now I'm wondering where that's going, an essay or what have you.
I'm the only one there. I assure you I have better things to do.
I would compliment your staff, one of whom took a great amount of time to walk me through kind of the operation, not walk me through your back, but walk me through how you operate the store, the types of product, the various things, and I was quite impressed. I was flabbergasted at the flow of people coming and going, and that there were 8 or 10 clerks. Wow. I my only complaint, which kind of goes to Dick's question of where is it, is it took me forever to find it, and I'd been told precisely where it was, and I mean, no signage. So guess what kind of a question I'm going to have, because I know there are restrictions, but obviously, your customers find you, but boy, I sure had a tough time finding it. I'd also say I was on the Planning Commission when the state changed the marijuana law, and when we wrote our first ordinance code provisions for it, and we were very cautious, very restrictive in the approach. I actually thought that we would first be more likely to see the commercial growing operation, and I had worked towards what a comment was made earlier that perhaps I saw that as a viable option for our EP zoning, but that hasn't come to fruition. The number one thing that sticks with me from that time and when we passed it was, well, two things. One, the lack of concern that was expressed by the community, and we had that under consideration for a considerable amount of time before taking action. And secondly, with that, we also invited and got testimony from the police chief, who, to paraphrase, essentially had no concerns with the business and was of the opinion that we were probably going to waste our time being restrictive, because as the community and as we began to get more comfortable, it was likely going to be a non-issue. They were not concerned from a drug aspect, from a crime aspect. I don't recall any comments to traffic, but at any rate, we were a little bit, I recall being a little bit put back that they had so few concerns, well, essentially no concerns with it. We were assuming we would hear some. So that's my memory from there, which it's interesting that the state has then now modified some of those rules. So.
All right, well, any other questions for Cliff?
Could you indulge us with some questions for a moment or not?
We could do one.
Sure. One of the things I want to recognize is, you know, as we have an aging population, as well as, you know, certain products, both THC and CBD, which do not generate highs, are used for medical conditions. One of the things I'd like to ask is, will the facility consider medical, which requires some additional paperwork from LCB? I believe it's not currently taken. It's okay to be mistaken, but I would like to ask that question is, certainly, it provides some tax relief to those who might be using marijuana for medical conditions.
Sure. So, a comment on that: the Liquor and Cannabis Board back in 2015 rolled the medical industry into recreational, and so right now the way the system works is the Department of Health can endorse a store to sell medical products. There's a huge, tremendous tremendous overlap in medical and recreational products. There are very, very few medical-specific products that are available in Washington State. But, for example, I sell pure CBD products that do not create a high, for example, and products that have both CBD and THC that are very popular. It's probably, 15% of sales or something. I'd have to look up exactly. And so if I had a medical endorsement, I could issue a medical card to a qualified patient, and it would save a qualified patient sales tax, which would be 10%. And so, unfortunately, it does not save the 37% cannabis tax. That's something that you'll have to talk to Olympia about. And then it also would allow me to sell a higher dose products to medical consumers. The reason that I do not take those cards in Issaquah is because it's a very, very, there just hasn't been a demand for it, unfortunately. There are very few people who have demanded it just because of the 10% cost savings. And at the time, I actually had a medical endorsement in the past, and unfortunately, there are no medical only products for, a year, and so I just decided not to renew. But it's something I can look at, certainly.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's move on to the development agreement. Is that good? Did you have something, Gary?
We'll just, okay. I don't want to vote, but just a point of order, I guess.
Okay.
No disrespect to the question, excellent question, excellent answer. But this is a topic that is going to go in front of the public with a public hearing. And I think we should, to the extent that we can, try and keep the conversation focused amongst ourselves. Because if we don't, while the dialogue may be good, every meeting essentially is a public hearing if we're having interaction with everybody who attends that might have a question or a comment. So that isn't a criticism of Mr. Thomas or the question that was asked and answered. It's more of a process request and observation. I've got a number of questions. I do have some concerns. Somebody's got to be a devil's advocate in the conversation, as well as requests. And you know, I think, again, with all due respect, I think the time is our time.
Yep.
And we appreciate some a little bit more structure around making sure that we exhaust all of our conversation before we open it up.
That's
particularly something that will be on the public hearing.
That's where we were headed. Yep. So we'll get into the development agreement.
So, Mr. Chair, you want to go page by page as we tend to do with these things?
That sounds good to me.
Sure.
Probably
best idea.
Yep.
My first is 2 of 11 in the whereases. And it's really more of a question than anything about the particular language in there right now, but about the fourth one from the bottom, before now, therefore, it's referencing the DNS. Am I correct? The CEPA will be issued before this agreement is signed?
Yeah, it needs to be. So
okay.
We're waiting for the checklist from the applicant. Once we receive that checklist, we then process CEPA and provide the public notification based on that.
Will we have the benefit of CEPA before we
make
our recommendation?
Not before the 13th. If you choose to delay your recommendation.
We could. Okay. Great. I'm also very interested in the traffic impact analysis on this, but the applicant, I would assume, has no obligation to begin that study prior to agreement. So I'm looking for confirmation. Where do you see that happening?
He will have to do that before we have the action on it. So as soon as we get the checklist, we'll look at it, and those studies that are required, we will respond, very quickly with what has to be done. You've been through this. It's a matter of how long it takes to get somebody on board and have them produce the work.
And if any chance that has been contracted for and underway?
So no. However, I've done one in a similar jurisdiction. With a project that's a similar size, so I'm very familiar with with the conclusions and what they're going to come up with. I think the other project that I had a traffic study done on was for a 1,300 square foot building, which I think is going to be very similar to what this phase one is. I'm going to have that done very shortly, and SEPA will get submitted tomorrow as well.
Okay.
The engineer has one question about it tomorrow.
Yes, can I piggyback on your question? Just so I'm clear on the progression of this,
mm-hmm.
SEPA checklist will be submitted.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the traffic analysis will not be submitted with the SEPA, correct? Okay. But then what I hear you kind of saying is, I think you probably are going to ask for the DNS or the SEPA determination, it's not prejudged, SEPA determination would be issued before we made a recommendation to council. Is that where you're
I would be leaning that direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. That'll help us.
And that would include the traffic impact analysis.
Right.
And like you said, any other studies you feel,
mm-hmm.
if there's a wetland study is required or whatever,
right.
it would be part of that SEPA analysis.
So that obviously won't be done for the public hearing on the 13th.
Correct.
And so what would we actually be asking the public to comment on? And what guidance are we asking from whomever might show up on the 13th, knowing that really the real work is yet to come and may take months, and no actual recommendation will occur until all that works out.
Yeah, if the commission feels that they need the actual mitigation measures, the way the process works is you have a checklist to determine where there might be an impact, and you'd use that checklist to determine what further study you need to identify what that impact is and what the appropriate mitigation measures are, which become mitigation measures applied to the project. And we do that quite often, at least here, in the actual development permit application. And when you have a DA, it's a little more complicated because it's just, is the use allowed? And then beyond that, you get into, if the use is allowed, what are the conditions that the use will be subject to that are more of a technical study rather than just the DA conclusions? And, you know, when we look at this, we think that there will be comment on those things because there is a review period for any, whenever you issue your either mitigated conditions or if you don't have conditions, a DNS. And that is sent out to agencies, it's sent out to properties within 300 feet of the legal parcel, and we do public advertising so people know this is out there. If you would like to see this, and the difficulty here is a little bit, I see exactly where you're going, because where I came from, I didn't have any administrative authority. We recommended to Planning Commission, all development permits went through Planning Commission, many went to council, and that's the way the planning laws in the state of California work. Here, a lot is done administratively, and so we follow that process in terms of getting everything wrapped up before you get an administrative approval. Because of the nature of this kind of an entitlement, this permit, and the use, I think it's probably really wise to have all of that done before we get a recommendation from the Planning Commission. Because usually with these kinds of issues, the issues people are concerned about are not necessarily those that they're talking about, but they're more value-oriented, okay? So it's better to get the facts on the table with regard to what the real parking and traffic and wetland and the other issues are, and have all the environmental issues put to bed, and then you kind of separate the wheat from the chaff as to what people are really interested in. So I support that.
So with that approach. Said, and piggybacking that on Gary's comment, tell me your thoughts on hearings. Do we hold the hearing at our next meeting, and then perhaps we end up scheduling a second,
mm-hmm.
or do we delay that hearing and
Have you advertised?
It's been advertised.
So here's what I would consider that you do. You hold it, you open it, and you continue it to a date certain where all that information is available, because that is just more transparency. You know, it gives you an opportunity to deal with the issues people are concerned about before they get that information, and then to focus on the issues they're concerned about from that information in the next hearing. So you can open it and continue it, and we can let you know what the ETA is for the normal advertising that would have already been out, and people would know that the determination is on the street and the studies are at the city, and they can come look at them before you have your continued date of hearing. So they've got all that to look at, and then they come in.
I do want to offer a clarification and get direction from you on this, because a DNS identifies impacts, but it doesn't go to the level of analysis that your code does. So the wetland analysis, for example, is based on knowing the site plan. You can do a wetland delineation, which just shows you where the boundary of the wetland is, mm-hmm. but to do the full wetland analysis, you need to know what are the impacts of the parking lot, how it's designed, shading, etc., which is predicated on a very specific proposal, which may not be available within the time frame of just doing a development agreement, unless the applicant were to seriously postpone or prolong his purchase and sale agreement.
Mm-hmm. You've got some comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel there should be a balance. I don't want to have the applicant go spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on studies and then ultimately come to the Planning Commission or Council who might say, well, we just don't like the idea of this
right. In
this location. So I think there has to be a balance there.
Right.
I mean, for me, just, you know, I'm going to trust staff on this. Whatever you feel is necessary to get a good, solid CEPA determination is what I would think we would bring to the commission.
Yeah, and I think what we'll want to look at in that DNS and what the Planning Commission should consider are what are the impacts of the property to adjacent property owners.
Right.
And the community, but not necessarily getting into issues that the code can otherwise address.
Mm-hmm. And then I have a question, since I don't think that I've done a development agreement since I've been on the Planning Commission. Mm-hmm. I missed the one meeting where there was the amendment to the DA. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to answer now, you can come back. So speaking of impacts, under CEPA, the determination of impacts is usually left to the CEPA responsible official, which is mm-hmm. you,
right.
Mr. Miller. But then, if you're presenting the CEPA determination to us as a Planning Commission, what is our role in, how are we supposed to take that information and work with it?
For example,
can we require, if it says there needs to be a traffic signal at this intersection, can we say, well, we think there should be two traffic signals, one at this intersection, one at that one?
Very easy question to answer.
Yeah, okay.
Anything that you're encumbering an applicant with that's a requirement has to be based upon some pretty good empirical evidence. So in the case of traffic, you have a level of service. If your level of service drops below what's acceptable in your comprehensive plan, then you have to mitigate for it and reach that level of service. So there are some metrics there, and that's kind of, I think, where Mike is going. If you're talking about storm drainage, tremendously technical issues involved in that, we have the stormwater manual that the county mandates we follow, and it's just chapter and verse. If you do this, you do that. And so we will follow the rules. And looking at the metrics and the threshold in the language of CEPA, if they exceed a threshold, it's a significant impact and they must mitigate for it. So we know those thresholds are reached through some empirical standards, and how you lower them is, and the mitigation measures are fairly prescriptive. So they have to do it. So I think what's really important in the way you use the information is to say, we understand what the impacts are, and we kind of know where the where the solutions are, and the staff can kind of indicate some of those that you're quite concerned about, if it's traffic or parking or that sort of thing. So there is a process to go through that where you would say, okay, what's the level of service impact that came out of that study? And then we could tell you where there would be mitigation measures necessary if a threshold was exceeded. And that's the dialogue we'd have. We don't get into every mitigation measure that we would suggest, because many of those will come out of the technical studies of looking at a site plan and the detail that we don't have at this point. I mean, the complete design.
Mr. Chair, it's slightly different for staff. I mean, my only analogy, my best background would be in thinking of it in terms of a plat, right? And so I suppose I'm thinking of our work here on the development agreement as analogous to the preliminary platting process, not
engineer.
Well, I'm saying this is the way I'm seeing it in my eyes. And so that's why the interest in SEPA, that's why the interest in the traffic study. And having presented in jurisdictions where plats went to planning commission, I guess I have always been favorable to the administrative process that we use, because you get seven non-technical people in a room and some crazy things can happen. So I'm generally okay with that notion. Because we are basically giving some exceptions to code, I think that's why I'm feeling I want to be very cautious, and traffic is a big one.
Yeah, I think you'll have the answers you need for that, because just the analogy I use is a threshold exceeded. We have a study. Is it or isn't it?
Yeah.
If it isn't, you can't demand mitigation.
And to Scott's comment about, I don't want any applicant going down the road. We've heard enough of that in feedback to our staff and community about applicants spending a lot of money only to be told, I don't want to go there either. And so I'm more than willing to go on record myself saying, I to date, not having heard from the public, I am in general favor of what's being presented, subject though to the things that I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Did that help, Scott, in terms of the way?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to get that out on the table.
Right.
I knew a lot of that, but
sure.
But I wanted to make sure we didn't go down a path of saying, well, we can require this and we can require that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the one word I don't think you used was nexus,
right?
Which
right.
is the really important term. If there's something in there's a nexus.
Right.
You know, well, this is a development agreement, so
it's
contractual.
More open.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there, I think there still has to be somewhat of a nexus.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we don't do use of traffic, again, as an example. That's pretty empirical stuff. I mean, you get information on what the peak hour traffic is, and we not only look at LOS, we also look at the geometrics and the turning movements and safety issues. So all those things get looked at. And, you know, how you design the entrance to be safe and that sort of thing, whether you allow left turns in or out, all of that has to do with, professional traffic engineering analysis.
Gary?
So we've talked about traffic, and I totally agree. I think it's extremely important. I think we should also get more economic analysis on this. And if I take a step back, kind of from a policy and procedural standpoint, I mean, basically, if I understand where we're at, we have a zone that permits retail marijuana. The problem is there are no properties that could accommodate the use. So now we're finding another potential location in a zone that currently doesn't permit the use. And it feels, this is just how it feels somewhat equivalent to a spot zone where we're looking at a piece of property and we're saying, we're going to permit that use by that person's project, kind of in a bit of a vacuum. And what I didn't see in the documentation is really what's the underlying rationale for permitting this use in this zone in the first place. Is there do we really feel like this is a highest, best use, an economic engine, for businesses in this area? it's all relative, but $250,000 annually to Issaquah doesn't sound like a huge number, and it was kind of qualified saying we expect that to be something less here in North Bend. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the traffic, I think there's an economic component that makes a more compelling argument for permitting the use in the first place,
right.
And particularly in the context of all of the zoning work and policy discussions on creating the uses for that mm-hmm. zone in this area,
right.
Historically. Because I, and I've mentioned this in some of the residential thing, I really struggle with trying to determine policy, drive policy, or drive regulation.
Right.
Project by project.
Well, one of the CED members had a kind of a similar concern. It was, are you offering a sort of a monopoly here by doing this? And that was his concern. Are you opening up to the world? And the fact of the matter is, anybody can come in, and we do have two other parties that are talking to us about sites.
Right. And so, taking that from this particular initial project and where that might lead. In this zone, I think the other piece besides the economic and the traffic and the other things we've already considered is kind of the a more comprehensive look at community impact and benefits. So I know Issaquah has been a good example. And there have been no problems there, and it's been endorsed by the officials in Issaquah. But I also, as a policy, part of this job is policy making. I want to make sure we're not just seeing what we want to see and focusing on what could be a false positive. Where are other communities, and one that comes to mind that's also rural, relatively small town, is Belfair. If you drive through downtown Belfair, there's a number of marijuana-related businesses, but it started with one,
right?
And has become more. So now, essentially, the character of that area is kind of driven by that type of business. And so, yeah, I think taking a little broader view of where
I think we're thinking of those things, and I think that. I think that the council is, because if you were to adopt the reduced standards, you'd open up a lot more sites to this. Mm-hmm. And I think as this becomes more accepted in society, people don't want to dive into the deep end. They want to see what it will do with their community. From our city administrator, she was very encouraged that the amount of money that would be coming in would be a very important income source to the city,
sure.
And that was her motivation. And you may have worked in a city that had a larger budget, but $250,000 is a big deal here. And so from an economic standpoint, there is an economic advantage. From the standpoint of, will this impact the community, or would we go down that road where you'd see more of these, I can't think of a better process to use to have control of limiting where they would locate these kinds of uses and how these uses would be dealt with from a community value standpoint by having pretty free rein on conditioning it. It's not like a typical use where you would say, let's allow this in every neighborhood commercial zone, because you'd have to have performance standards that would relate to things that maybe aren't very tangible. We don't want that many. And I think there's some economic controls over it being proliferated in that I don't know the community you've talked about, but I know, say, for instance, Clay Element has three of them. Well, how can they support three? Well, I think it's the drive-by and the drive-through traffic and the freeway orientation. And, there's only so much market here before this isn't attractive for people to do it. And I think it's prudent for communities to have enough control that they can determine where they go and how many they have. So on the one hand, you can say you need to open it up to everybody. On the other hand, you need to say, do we really want a proliferation? And,
well, that's kind of what I'm getting.
And is this an experiment that can be controlled and you can have community values involved enough? that you've got one site, one experiment, let's see how it goes sort of thing, and you have the proper controls. If you don't like the way things are going and you set standards up that are being violated, you can terminate the DA. So I think there's an ability to get to where you want to go without, you know, opening the floodgates, so to speak, or not using the right kind of concerns to be able to look at a site in the way that we should. And I'm not saying you should or shouldn't approve it, because you may find through this process that there are certain attributes you'd like for a site that don't exist here, and another site would be better, and that's your prerogative.
Right. So don't get me wrong, I'm not specific at $250,000. That's a lot of money. It's like I said, it's all relative.
Right.
Are there other opportunities that might be more of an economic engine that this might be potentially precluding? Mm-hmm. Not seeing that kind of economic analysis in the development agreement, I think
you're going to increase traffic. And one of the things we did early on is we said, could you locate, for instance, in the Safeway shopping center, where they have a lot of vacancies and you're close to the freeway, you can get a lot of traffic. It seemed like a great win to try to increase business. And there were federal loans and other restrictions on the property that didn't allow it to occur. So even though that might have been the top choice of the applicant or the top choice of us, it's not available. So my feeling is we have really, I've had to almost turn a battleship around in a creek to get the mentality, I think, of the council focused very much on economic development. And we're really going on a foray to do that. We're going to conferences, for instance, on hotels to try to attract additional hotel folks. There are certain targeted things we're doing. We met with the council at their retreat and gave them a kind of a plethora of things that we think are important to do. We need a lot of economic drivers here. I think this could be one in a certain segment of the economy. We have a lot of neighborhood commercial users that just got livid when we took the residential use out, which just points out to you the lack of demand for commercial land use, or they'd prefer that. So we didn't want to use up all of our sewer capacity in creating compatible land uses in the commercial zones that would make them not useful for what we may eventually have demand for. And what we really find in the commercial uses is that population growth has to be in place to get enough wallets and buying power there to attract several uses into the community. So we're getting that growth now. We'd like to see the balance occur. And we're having to offer a lot of incentives to do that because we're not big enough to get some of the uses that we'd like to have.
Can I jump in for one second?
I just wanted to tag on what Harry was saying and maybe add to it a little bit. That is, you know, are we looking at this project seriously? Because we've had failure in previous projects and we really are looking for a win. When we have located this site, have we had the hotel built and occupied, would we be considering this site for this use? I think not. I think we'd be looking somewhere else. We need some commercial wins. I know that. I feel it. I feel it. And I feel like we need it so bad that we're going to put this use in this location rather than somewhere else where it's going to be more visible and more lucrative. Maybe it has some constraints that we can't apply to it. But I think that we would not be choosing this site for this use had we had other successes and things prior to this. And I'm just hoping that if we, as a group, we decide this is the place to put this business, that it doesn't become a strip mall for other similar uses. Is that going to happen?
Dave, you mentioned the evaluation done at the IC at Exit 31. Was there any similar consideration for the IC at Exit 34?
I'd have to say we're not going out and doing a...
I'm saying doing, are you aware of, not that you did anything.
No, I do know that the applicant looked throughout the community, and we spent a lot of time saying, here's, according to the map of where we could allow it in zones, here's where you should look first. If you're going to look in other zones where you would use a DA, we think that the premier locations would be near freeway access, where there are commercial uses in the zoning. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the number one, you know, site that we'd like them to look at for a couple of reasons. One, it's more volume, easy in, easy out. And a lot of people, we thought about, well, where's a lot of this market? There are going to be people from our community, but certainly that wouldn't support this kind of a use on its own. And so then you're saying if there are people that are recreating in the area or driving through, you really would like it to be closer to the freeway so that the volumes would be greater. We'd make more from it, and it would bring less traffic into the community. So all those things were discussed, and Cliff could probably react to that himself in terms of what his investigation showed and why he ended up where he ended up. But that's not where we thought the premier site would be, and so we kind of had the same thought process that you did, Dick, in terms of, hey, really investigate these because it's going to be better for you, better for us, and we'll help you with it. But it just didn't work out. So that's really a site selection thing that Cliff can relate to.
Sure. I guess I would counter that point about best location by pointing out that the QFC is just down the road. And QFC thought that East North Bend Way was a good enough location that they, you know, located one of the two grocery stores in that area. And so I view this type of business very similar to the grocery business, that people are going to stop by my store on the way home, or maybe even on their work, they're going to go and run an errand first before they go to work.
Not asking.
Not on the clock.
You wouldn't believe the creative ideas that are coming out of my department now.
We're hoping that the co-location by City Hall was not intentional.
Walking distance.
Exercise.
Well, Londi has a very nice series of comments on how it meets our brand that we'll bring to you as well.
One of the big selling points to me on at least looking at this, and I can't wait to hear from public out state too, is the fact that we passed our ordinance in year X under a state law that existed at that time. The state law has become more lenient, and you cover that here, and we now have discretion, and that rather than change our code, we are deciding to do this development agreement at this point in time. And I think that you allude to that in here, but mm-hmm. I think that connection needs to be a little bit stronger to help clarify that's part of why we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an option we're taking, because that might help explain to some of the people who might oppose this that, well, you know, we can just change our ordinance. I mean, easier said than done, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there, it's not. My first thought was I didn't like this because it's a development agreement. I generally don't like those because it's giving a specific, like kind of like you said, a spot zone. But when you think about, well, what we're really doing is we're looking at this instead of amending our code right now, then it makes more sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, like you said,
that's exactly what we're doing.
Our code later.
That's exactly what we're doing. And I think if we have mapped what would be available if we did change our code.
Right.
And I think the predominant feeling about taking a look at that is, do you really want to open it up to all of these locations?
Right.
And it's a spot zone. I mean, spot zone may be appropriate in some cases.
It might be.
Where you don't want, I mean, the reason that people have made it, given it a black eye, is because equal protection under the law sort of thing, and, you know, wanting to give everybody an even playing field to locate and have several opportunities. But given the history of this whole change in our society and the legal concept of it, it's just an incremental thing. It's something where you can use the discretion a state gives you with another layer. And by the way, when the law was changed, it said you can keep 1,000 feet, but we allow you the opportunity to reduce it around these receptors if you choose. So rather than do that and open up the whole playing field, we're saying, using a little bit more refined judgment on the part of you and the council, where do you think it's appropriate? Given the fact that you have this latitude, where would you put it?
In Mercer Island, the city council chose not to change their ordinances.
Right.
Well, it's a little bit different situation there, but they did talk about it and decided not to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, and then maybe I propose we get back into the development agreement and go through. My question was when I guess the second public hearing would occur, like when we have the information that we talked about earlier. I went off on a little bit of a tangent since then, but the SEPA checklist, traffic analysis, studies, SEPA determination, I think it was to that point. So what is the anticipated date?
Well, that's going to depend on the applicant then, how much time it takes them to prepare that information.
It could be quite a while.
A couple months?
It's more like
okay.
It depends on how responsive. It depends on two things. Number one, you get the SEPA checklist. Once we have that, we can look at that and say, where do we need further investigation? What's the scope of work? Then we give that back to them, and they go to somebody and sign them up to get it done. There are certain incentives or pressures or whatever you want to call it that developers use to try to get things, or applicants do, to get it sooner than later. And what we're seeing is a little bit of a slowdown and a lot of that consulting work, because that's at the very front end of the development process, and we all know the economy is slowing down a bit. So, I think we could probably get some shorter turnaround times for some of the things he's looking for. So what we could do is kind of get back to you once we have that information, when we've talked to Cliff, and say this is the ETA, when we think we're going to have it. So we will give that to you in plenty of time before the hearing, so that you can continue it to a date that will include whatever you need to have before that.
Okay. Yeah, I think there'll be value in that February 13th meeting, just to see where the public stands, just on the topic in general,
mm-hmm.
and maybe the location and whatever information we have. So
yeah, we'll try to track. We're receptive to the conversation. We want to make sure you have what you need.
Did I read that we're going to have a joint meeting with the EDC and the Planning Commission in conjunction with this?
No,
parks for a different topic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm ready for page 3.
All right,
page 3 it is. I was just curious, under 3.1, you seem to be going to some degree of specificity there, replace all existing siding and such. Seemed a little deep compared to some of the other. Was there something in particular about that building that's driving that? Or?
The concern, and I think Lonnie asked the CED staff to with kind of the overarching concern of making this acceptable to the community in terms of the appearance of the site.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the two things you're concerned about is it up to the standards, mm-hmm. design standards we'd like to see? Is it attractive, clean, and the way we'd like it mm-hmm. developed? And so she asked us to develop some standards for that. Now, to the extent that they can use what's there currently, great, but we want enough flexibility to be able to bring it up to standard and have it be an attractive commercial use. We see a lot of conversions of single-family homes into chiropractic or, dental offices and things like that. And they do a great job, and we just want to make sure that kind of a job is the job that is done.
I was thinking perhaps the goal was to make it appear as more of a commercial building, because I know in our
yeah.
current code we essentially say no residential location.
I think it's to make it look more like a commercial building. I mean, the frequency that people are going to use it and to be on site, you want it to be as attractive as any other new establishment that you move into your community. So it's really a matter of aesthetics.
Question on 3.2, the lighting. In that, our standard is for the full cutoff lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just didn't want some sort of lore.
Yeah. It'll be cut off lighting, so it all shines out. What we do want, though, is we want a very secure site in terms of being able to see on site.
Anything else on that page?
Yeah, so on the project itself, so in section one, which begins on page 2. It lists the addresses of the various parcels, and the graphics all show the boundary that includes all those parcels.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we've been talking about is phase 1 and phase 2. And
mm-hmm.
I think the applicant was uncertain over anything beyond phase 1 and phase 2. Can the development agreement give... Going back to the conversation we just had, this is essentially an experiment. We can try it. It doesn't obligate us to do anything. Can we make the parameters of the development agreement and what we approve to be limited to the phase 1 and phase 2 parcels and make sure that there's no obligation, no commitment to the other parcels?
Yeah.
That would be...
Yeah, it really depends on whether what you're... I think there are two things that would impact that. One is doing a little bit of advanced site planning,
mm-hmm.
And making sure that we're including the right parcels. And the second is if you had any concerns about other parcels that, even though they're not being redeveloped, maybe the adjacent use, if you had some concern about that,
right.
We could include something like that in here. And I'm not sure at this point, without having the environmental work done, and not addressing Dick's issue about right-of-way, whether that's something you really want or don't want. You don't really know what parcels you're dealing with until you've had this discussion and you find out, okay, we're limiting it to these, let's just limit it.
But it is limited to that, and that's describing what the project is. It's the development of a commercial building to house the Maryland retail. If the property owner chooses at some point in the future to put in a dental office on one of the other properties, this development agreement is not going to apply to that. So...
But the project site lists all of the different parcels.
And it can be limited. The short answer to your question is it can be limited. What we need to know is what are the parameters that he'll need to get through phase 2.
I think what Commissioner Tiles asking, I had somewhat of a similar question in regard to what some of the description in number 2 about the project and how far it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the... desire for the flexibility of continuing to have all four parcels in play because there's a lot of planning yet to do. I guess I'm thinking more about the remainder in the single family homes, and while we as a community still desperately need, you know, options at the lower end of the housing market, this is a zone that we've targeted for not wanting to continue with
mm-hmm.
standalone housing. And so I'm wondering if we should, if this agreement is going to include all four parcels, if we should be addressing that future use would not include the continuance of the single family.
That's an option. That's an option that you can't.
So
that discussion.
Make that change, I'm
yeah, look, that discussion hasn't been had yet.
Page 4 and 5.
A few hundred on 4.
Okay.
Want to lead?
Want me to lead? Okay. Section 3.7 is fairly simple. So, not having been in a marijuana retail store yet, and I'd probably go visit. The one, I guess, quite want to go to Manhattan Press. I'll be right there. What type of odors are, you talk here about no odor shall be present. Is there, what type of odor might there be?
Well,
I mean, are people can't test the product on site. Right?
No on-site consumption, and everything that comes into the store is prepackaged. So there's no packaging material. So it's only smell that could seep through the bag, which is minimal. I'm the worst person to ask because I don't even smell it anymore.
Okay. Yeah, well, when you walk into a tobacco store, you just smell tobacco.
Right.
You can't avoid it.
Well, I guess if you wanted to know what odor would be there, walk into their store.
I was going to say,
because
so
once you get in the store, you can smell it, and contained
right.
in there, that's fine.
Right.
We're
when
just saying,
I
not
in
not
the door.
Escape.
I immediately, there again, there was no signage telling me where to go once I entered the front door. Well, my nose took me to
okay.
the location of, within this building of where it was, and but that said, and I tend to have a fairly sensitive nose, things like tobacco and such, pulled up in the parking lot, and I didn't
No.
Detect any odor when I got, you know, it wasn't until I actually entered the building. So I had a question on that one as well.
Well,
what are we trying to
get at? We've had people complain about odors, even with restaurants. And in this case, if you go in it and you smell it, would you find that objectionable if that were outside of the building? I don't think it will be, but the fact of the matter is we don't want it to be. So that's the issue.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I had sent you this comment before. There's a limitation not to exceed 30 decibels.
Yeah, that's very low.
That's very low. Really, I mean, it's the dB reading outside of my house, I get a higher ambient noise level than that. And this is on North Bedway. So just take a look at that.
Why are we going beyond what's already in code?
This was an initial draft, and I think we'll go back and look at that. The residential or the commercial residential property is 57 decibels.
Yeah.
So that would be a more appropriate standard to use in this case.
Yeah. Thank you. Agreed.
I would think it might be different if this was a manufacturing operation that we knew was going to be quite noisy, but it's a
but still, you want to keep that standard that's acceptable.
Yeah.
And you're right. The ambient noise of the traffic will be on that.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I had on that page.
I've got a few others. Mostly a comment again. 3.4.3, discussing color. I certainly get neon, maybe bright, but what I read within that is boring beige. And for one, really tired of boring beige color, and so I'd like to see the palette opened up. I don't see why a building can't have a little more variety.
Well, read the series: gray, tan, beige, green, blue, or brown.
Earth tones, including muted shades.
Yeah, I think what we don't want is bright colors. Okay, that's the point.
But could it be no bright colors as a primary color? What about an accent color? If somebody had red as an accent color on their roof or something.
Yeah, and all of
this is just a starting point for
it. I think the point is, if you want to reword it, it's great. The idea is you don't want stripes, Eat at Joe's, you know, bright colors, that kind of thing. That's not where we're going.
It's like the cool stamp type smoking smoke rings on the sign, right?
Get some old Vegas signs.
I presume 3.4.4 on advertising within windows is, again, that's a step above what we restrict any other business to, and not wanting to appear to promote that product. Okay.
And I think public safety, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen businesses where the whole windows get covered with posters primarily.
Right.
Well, please.
Well, sure, but I'm saying we don't have that as a restriction
for others.
For others,
right.
So this is something we're kicking it up, just an acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
Under the 3.5.2, I just want to make sure I understand in regard to the phase one improvements on landscaping. Are we talking about screening that business from?
We're talking about an attractive frontage. All commercial
but allowing the commercial business to be visible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the right away width of another way? 150.
It's
wide.
Extreme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's like that gravel strip that's in front of the developments. That's part of the right away. He's not acquiring any part of the.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do, we've struggled with this. We don't want to require full frontage improvements with this kind of a conversion of an existing building, but we want to clean up the frontage. That's our intent. Landscaping, attractive, rather than putting curb gutter, sidewalk, underground, and overhead lines and all that, we're trying to go some distance to make the appearance look better.
Yeah, that gravel road in particular we included in here because we don't want that to be the de facto parking lot for the use. So that gets cleaned up as an initial phase one.
I guess that continuing on the idea of how do I find this while still wanting to decorum to a level of the signage, and I try to read the wax on the signage as well, and so I guess I got a pretty good view that signage is heavily, heavily restricted in this use, but so my question is just, does that also include they can't even set an A-board out at the curb at during business hours? It's basically
we would like to discourage
nothing.
The use of A-boards. That is
no,
a very
but we have not chosen
signing.
To go to our signage code in about,
right.
Let's see, 12 years. So.
How are you looking at me?
You and I should sit down and I'll there are navigational tools for people to get to these places, and they become repeat business destinations, and there are apps that have been put together.
I guess my real question there is, in this clause, there's nothing really beyond the wax.
No pole signs and the no A-boards.
Yeah, which I think was not allowed within the wax either. I mean, all I could remember reading there
yeah,
was
it may, that may
two
be
building a, signs. On the building.
Two 1,600 square inch signs on the building,
yeah.
And no A-frame signs are allowed. But the monument signs are allowed. I don't know if they're allowed in North Bend. They're not allowed in Issaquah, which is why I don't have a monument sign on the way in, which
right.
is, might be why you struggled to find it. So there's in Issaquah, I actually only have one 1,600 square inch sign on the building because why put.
I had a question on the signage. I think we're talking local to the site here, but driving along I-5 anyway, there's like big billboards like Bud Hut and all this other stuff up there. So is that something, I didn't read the WAC. It may go to that as far as what would be allowed along I-90, but is that where the big sign would go up or something?
We don't allow off-premise signs of that type within the thing.
Okay. I was going to say the WAC does make an exception for billboards, which kind of threw me off, but
well,
I knew our local didn't.
The other thing we have to be careful of is we do not regulate the right-of-way along the I-90.
That's what I figured. Anyway,
so we're not, we don't have a jurisdiction there. We're talking about sign codes that we have jurisdiction over.
Well, if they wanted to volunteer to clean up the first 3 miles in the North Bend, they could get a sign up by the freeway for that.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything left that the casino hasn't already volunteered for.
Yeah.
But we're not trying to restrict this business from having signage that lets people know they're there.
The intent is to keep things tasteful.
Exactly. So we're not doing anything
right.
more restrictive for this particular use, are we, than we would for any other commercial use that might go in this location?
The pole signs and the A-board signs could be potentially allowed.
That is more restrictive. That was kind of where my question went more to.
In terms of like
wax.
A sign on the building or a sign at the entrance to the property, that would be allowed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sign at the entry? I thought I heard no.
We're talking about, we don't want tacky signs at the entry. If they wanted to put a monument sign that was allowed in the zone, they did it tastefully and they lit it and they, you know, all that sort of thing. If they're following the code, that's great. But just to put an A-frame out there or to put a pole sign out there, we don't want that kind of an aesthetic.
So that I agree with.
What about a guy with a movie sign stand
out?
Well, some guys, when they have this stuff, they just do stuff like that, you know.
I think something that just a business just to the west is a Big Dog Firearms, which is a business that could have similar concerns. It's legal as well. It has a sign. So I think that we shouldn't, for that reason, restrict this business because
right.
they have Big Dog Firearms right,
right
there. So we should at least allow whatever they have or
mm-hmm.
something similar. But I understand this is different, and maybe we could restrict it in a different way. Tasteful, I agree. The sandwich boards, I would agree with not having that. I mean, that's a temporary sign. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty kind of desperate, I guess, in
yeah,
some ways. You know. Yet our code does not restrict those. Where I was going is, what are we doing because of this use? different than we have within our sign code. I think right. Your example is a good one. Firearms, liquor, cigarettes. Why are we? Are we? And so far, I'm not clear on whether we are or are not really saying that.
The very clear statement that I think that Mike made is no temporary triangular signs out there, and no pole sign. That allows an awful lot of other opportunities. Now, I think the reason for that is, why are we concentrating on the aesthetics and showing that these kinds of uses can be attractive and cannot stretch to the limit what you can do under the code and are either equal to or better than other sites? That's what we're trying to do. We know there's a community value issue here, and we're trying to be sensitive to it, that's all. And these are things that we drafted in this that are examples to work from. So if you'd like to have a different kind of sign, or you don't like the fact that we're regulating this differently, that's why it's here.
Not to beat this into the ground, but I think you need to be more specific about not having A-frame signs. Right now it says no on-premise signage. You can have an on-premise A-frame
sign. That's a good point.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to extend the meeting for 30 minutes. And I'll just add to that to suggest that we likely do not talk about item 6.
I agree.
The amendment says not done.
I would like to request that we do introduce that because we have a public hearing that we're hoping to do with the planning or the Parks Commission in February.
30 minutes.
So I can keep that one very brief. I think we may need
second. More time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor of extending to 9:30, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. 9:30 we go. Yeah, my comment was just that I think we could take a half an hour with this, and then so I'm maybe looking at 9:45 or so. We've done that in the past, for sure. Mm-hmm. We definitely went to 10, and it may be appropriate to do it in this case. We'll do another check-in at 9:30.
Mm-hmm. I'm up to 3.9.
Speeding through. Again, the question is, are these hours of operation different than what we apply to any other retail establishment?
Yes, they are.
Why?
I think it again comes back to trying to ensure that the use is presenting itself as a reasonable community business. Again, we're throwing things out for consideration. That doesn't
seems like it's a reasonable time period to be open. It's a simple answer.
I'm not even commenting to that. I'm trying to understand it in context to other named uses.
Yeah, it just seems like a reasonable time period to be open. I'd like to hear from Cliff. Cliff, are these typical to what you have now or not?
Absolutely. The Issaquah store is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Liquor and Cannabis Board only allows me to be open from 8 a.m. to midnight. So this is you know, would restrict me by 2 hours potentially. Yeah. I'm fine with it just because I wouldn't have any intent to operate after 10 p.m. just because just for safety reasons.
Mm-hmm. Crazies come out.
Well, Issaquah.
10 to 10, you said?
Right. Issaquah allows me to open from 8 to midnight. But
oh, Issaquah.
The city allows me to be open from 8 to midnight. I only choose to operate.
So this is, again, also in consideration of the adjacency of the mobile home park, you know, headlights coming in at 11:30 or whatnot to be disruptive.
Yeah. And again, I'm not passing judgment on any of these. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to understand them within the rest of our code.
I have something on 3.10, and again, not having been in a marijuana retail business, it may be a moot point. Here we're talking about not seeing drug paraphernalia or marijuana product from outside of the business, from the parking lot or adjacent right-of-way. But we also want the windows visible. We don't want posters and stuff on the windows. So my question is, if you're looking at a window, what are you going to see? Are you going to have to set product back?
Well, generally speaking, generally speaking, I think what these places do is they have a check-in up front. Because they've got a check ID. And correct me if I'm wrong, Cliff, but you usually keep product back near your storage area and you don't want a lot of...
Exactly. Liquor and Canvas Board has a rule as well that the product can't be visible to the public from a public right-of-way.
Okay.
And my intent is to disclose it, close off all the windows, and so there wouldn't be any windows at all. So the only opportunity someone would have to actually see in would be if the door is open.
And that's something new to me. Is that something we want, is to not have windows into a retail business?
I think in this case, when you're converting a single-family home, you're not going to have necessarily a commercial storefront that you would normally have.
That's true.
And so you're not going to have as much visibility with it if you use the existing.
Regarding the permanent building, it's going to have to meet our design standards, which does require a certain level of transparency on the ground floor.
I would disagree with not having visibility through this. I think it's a product. It's like a toy store. I mean, you just see what you see. And
well, you're going to follow whatever the cannabis board says you have to do.
I understand. I get that, too. But when we've got the state law to deal with, it was an interesting feeling. And I guess I also, thinking about one of the things that a city administrator said to the CED committee about, which the agreement speaks to, not allowing armed guards and, you know, checkpoint and double doors and things like that. And this sort of feels like that, too. And I'd have to say, you know, like when I went in today to this establishment, I kind of almost felt like I was going into this, you know, the little restricted hallway after I got past the guard or the check person, excuse me, at the front checking ID. I mean, it was funny. I almost had the feeling of, am I going into a Halloween haunted house? You know, I was being directed through this tight little turn.
I think that's just a matter of the...
It was obviously screening all of the product.
It's somewhat a function of the building they're in and the space they're working with, too.
Yeah, I fully expect that. But it does kind of say to me, I don't like the idea of closing it all in. It just light is important.
Okay.
Yeah. I think some would talk about.
I don't know how you do that within the.
Well, I don't think we're requiring that here. We're just saying no visible drug paraphernalia from the front window.
Yeah, maybe the language on this is more about not storefront display of drug paraphernalia.
Maybe that's
Which state law prohibits anything?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Right.
So can we take that section out? If state law already deals with it, why do we need it in here?
If it's something like you have in the 311 there, the retail store shall comply with all of the, visibility requirements or whatever section it's under.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just try to reword it a little bit there, which probably captures what it says.
Yeah, and in the case of 310, we didn't know that was the requirement when we wrote it.
Okay.
Yeah, just something to consider.
Yeah.
Next, answer my own question on that one.
I have. I'm down on five.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about yet so much, but we've went through it under the project. Is that the phase one and phase two will be completed within 3 years of the execution date of this agreement? But I'm just curious if it's just kind of standard to have it the term go to 10 years?
Development agreements usually do have a term.
So that's why. Even though everything would be done in three.
Right. And the reason that you do the development agreement is to make sure that they at least accomplish the things they need to accomplish and get them in place.
Yeah.
And then usually
give time for
they continue to use it. The other thing is you have an opportunity to come back and if you want to have this changed, or or if by the time you get to development, you have a different program, you come back and amend it. I think the reason for the term also is to have some degree of control over the use that just doesn't expire.
Similar to that, yeah, I kind of had the same then what, you know, after, so it expires in 10 years and then what. So assuming that all has gone perfectly to plan, the phases went through, the new business is established, it's complying with all of what's in the development agreement. The development agreement expires. Does that then take the gloves off, or manages? Or in the worst case, development agreement's expired. Okay, we've not adopted any code change. Now this is no longer an allowable use. That came to mind. What happens when this agreement ends?
Well, I would assume, without talking to Eileen or Kenyon, attorney, that they would have an opportunity, knowing that, coming near the end of the term, to have it extended. And I've seen that happen very simply in DAs. It's a very simple kind of little rider that's put on it, that we extend this for another 10 years.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So the 10-year term basically just continues to authorize this use and operation under these conditions for a 10-year period.
And something else could happen. Let's say the continuing acceptance of this happens and we change our code to allow for this to be a permitted use, and so that might happen. But since it is an anomaly in that respect, you want to give them a long enough term to be successful and an opportunity to come back and re-up.
I'm on page 6 at the top, and it's related to the kind of similar to the signage, but just the direction of how people will be directed to the store using exit 32. And so it just made me think, when is the roundabout completion date? At 4:36.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's planned for this year. Okay. So I believe it's summer of this year.
That'll be completed?
Under construction.
Under construction. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, I think that, there could be a lot of the retail leakage, which if that's the right term, but people coming off I-90 onto this site, which would be a good thing for the business and the tax revenue and all that. But I think that it has a lot of visibility, really.
The reason that this routing was put in here was to not impact the downtown. But the fact of the matter is, we're not going to be out there.
So my question goes exactly to that in the opposite. Why? I'd rather see good traffic coming to our downtown and perhaps stopping for lunch or dinner.
Yeah, I think there's the constant push and pull, and we hear it every day. Traffic is a problem in the downtown. It's kind of like success is a problem. But we hear it every day, and it's a hue and cry that we hear all of the time. How can you reduce the traffic through downtown? The congestion is terrible. So I think that's why that was put in. I certainly didn't ask for it.
I think that doesn't promote our commercial district.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, both. You've got folks coming off the crest having to turn out 30.
Well, I think just be silent on it.
Right.
Okay.
We don't say that with any other business.
Yeah. Right.
You get a new restaurant opening in town, we don't say
your customers may only come.
Yeah. And people are going to use their own GPS device anyways. So whatever the shortest route is, they're going to.
Yeah.
Okay, I have something on 7.
I haven't finished with that one, actually, on 6.
Oh, sorry.
Was there a general consensus that we're removing that then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that sounds good. Thanks. I just was curious, the $25,000 contribution, very nice. I don't know if that was negotiated, but it seemed odd outside of a TIA showing an impact to require just something that was negotiated.
That's it. Okay. Awesome.
Nice.
Second.
Something
else I had sent to staff, hoping maybe you got a chance to think about it. Right. In the middle, 6 line down, it says, city must approve
any other retail store who may wish to purchase the property. So my question is, what if somebody wanted to lease the property? Or, you know, this applicant decides this applicant decides to lease the store to somebody else. And I know there's liquor control, you know, the liquor and cannabis board licensing and everything. So I just think this should be broad enough to cover that.
Yeah.
It's somewhat covered under paragraph 12 under assignment, but I'm not sure legally whether it's the same thing. So that might be something to brought by the city attorney.
Okay.
Maybe the language is
purchase or lease.
To purchase, lease, or in any way operate.
Something,
that was all. All right.
Okay.
8, 9, 10, 11. I didn't have it tied to a specific one, but at the bottom of page 6, I wrote a note that said, you know, recognizing that this is a cash business, I thought I heard, again, this was at the CED presentation, I thought I heard discussion around that there would be cash handling requirements in this agreement. Unless I missed it, that's not here.
No, it's not here. Cliff, do you want to speak to that? Because you do have a business model.
Sure. So, let's see. I guess just broadly, cannabis businesses cannot do business or are not allowed to open up deposit accounts with federally chartered banks. However, they can open accounts with state chartered credit unions that decide to accept cannabis business. There are a handful of them in the state. The largest one in King County is Solow Credit Union, and that's the bank that I do business with and have since day one. And they contract with Garda, the armored car company, and Garda comes by and picks up cash every single day, just like any other business, you know, so on and so forth. Beyond, I guess.
There are some folks who have less transport of cash to the institution and therefore may represent a larger target to somebody, and I think that's the issue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I choose to have daily cash pickups at all of the stores that I operate, and whereas theoretically somebody, you know, could choose to have a pickup once a week if they really wanted to, and just you know, it would save them money. I don't see how that's worth it in any way. So.
So I guess why I brought it up is that there are several locations in here where we're speaking about security and concerns for, you know, whether it be guards, whether it be how the building is built, et cetera, and that seemed to be one that I remembered from that conversation as pretty important. And so if the applicant is willingly saying, I'm going to do this already, and we consider that a best practice for security reasons to discourage crime, seems like an obvious clause.
And I would say the way that this has been developed, it wasn't really in a vacuum. There had been a lot of discussion with Cliff. What's your reaction to that? How would you feel about that?
Sure. It wouldn't change my operations a bit. So yeah. I think the hopefully, perhaps it's the only thing that I can think of is if for some reason if ever an armored car company decided that they weren't going to do business, if there were ever a lapse, then hopefully the language could be sufficiently broad as to say that you know, cash needs to be removed from the store daily or something to that effect, just because it's, I know that Loomis, for example, a number of years ago said, no, we're not going to take cannabis cash, and that's why
How about we do this? I just a note, add a cash pickup provision. I'd like to see some language from Cliff.
Yeah.
If it's something that works for him and it covers the base, we'll put it in.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Perfect, absolutely.
What's the reluctance for these security operations not to pick up cannabis?
Cannabis is still federally illegal. It's still Schedule One controlled substance, and so the federal government, I mean, it opens up a business.
They're worried about a seizure?
So yeah, asset forfeiture and so on and so forth. It seems like a remote possibility these days, given that we have a number of years of precedence, but theoretically the DEA could come in at any time and say no more.
Okay. Motion 7. Anything for 7? Number 12 on the assignment, just a comment, maybe just fine here. The last sentence that starts with one of the reasons the city has agreed below sounded more to me like a whereas clause than in the agreement. I get why it was being stated there because it's reinforcing the assignment, but just a thought. Anything else we haven't covered tonight on this topic?
I just want to say on Exhibit A, I found that really hard to read. I see a whole bunch of cross-hatched things, but I'm not sure what all that means. So I guess that's allowable areas now that I look at it, but...
pretty hard to read.
Yeah, it's just, I'm not sure what you can do with it, but it just maybe make the legend bigger.
Maybe that if the yellow cross-hatching is a different color, it would be
cool. Yeah, I don't know. You guys figure
instead
out.
Instead of showing the whole city map, can we not just blow up the particular area or call it?
Well, the title of it is looking at where, is to look at the whole city and show where you could or you couldn't, and then show the dispensary location.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, we'll work on the graphics of that a little bit. It's kind of hard to read.
One thing that's helpful is to look at the, in this case, the best you can do with it is to look at the Word version and then zoom in on your computer, and the resolution is pretty good. That's with what we have. If you had, I think this is in GIS, so if you had that in your program, then that would be the absolute best way. I think maybe a JPEG or something was created of that.
Okay.
And then put out, but I did zoom into it, and it is it
we
does
have,
it, the resolution
does
clear pretty decent, I would say.
Okay,
it's more of a print. One comment though to just continue on this exhibit was I just started to look into the changes as far as restrictions, and it sounds like it's dependent on the city and what they will allow, and we haven't went there yet in North Bend, but it's just trying to figure out what this map shows, and what I read in the disclaimer is it references a 500-foot zone, so I don't think that's something we've agreed to, but it would, I guess that's just saying that it's reducing it in half. That's just something that could be done, and it would show a lot of locations, and I think this, I'm guessing this shows just that this specific address we're looking at, where the development agreement is proposed, that would be an allowed use area.
Mm-hmm.
The part that confused me a little bit was the licensed daycare, which is the Encompass up there, and I think that you have to zoom in on the actual GIS version or maybe in the Word version and see, but it seems like there should be a setback from that. I think there's a distinction maybe between a school and a daycare. There's a lot of if we do in North Bend, it's going to be quite a process. So
yeah.
I can see the value in doing this
development
agreement. But anyway, that's just something where I just don't see a setback at all from this view from Encompass. So I know we're not.
Yeah, what we
location.
Did is we used our GIS person to look at. We made a series of maps. What would it be, where would it be allowed if you went with the full allowance of the 50-foot? And then we looked at other kinds of buffers for that. But if there's something we can do to make this more useful, be happy to accept those comments and do it.
I don't think there is for me, I think, but it's. I think it's a good starting point if we're not going down that road of really digging into the changing the code overall.
Yeah,
I don't know how much it matters.
Yeah, I don't think they're going
there. That this visuals are always helpful, so
yeah.
I appreciate something in there.
Well, in this entire document, we never disclosed that this is a dispensary, it's just a store. I don't know if that's tactical or not, but Exhibit A shows it as being a marijuana dispensary. Should we not use dispensary and call it a store as we have the rest of the document?
Is that what they're called, though? I'm not sure.
Well, it seems as though the document is boilerplate just calling it the store.
Okay.
Not trying to label it.
The retail store.
Yeah, the retail store.
Mm-hmm.
So in the exhibit, it probably should follow retail.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's another term to use, yes.
Right. And also in the city of North Bend, the potential to have marijuana, I think those should just be potential retail store.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just to be consistent. And they, everywhere it says dispensary, should change the store.
Yeah, I think maybe what's throwing it off is this exhibit's really showing per this potential code change all of the potential areas, which is clouding the question of this particular deed.
Else on this topic? Well, we have next steps. We'll have the public hearing. Will there be planning commission deliberation after that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So we'll have a discussion and check in, and then we'll likely just leave it there for a little bit. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
continue
right.
The hearing to the next.
Yeah.
Can you continue it without noticing a specific date?
You're going to have to continue to a date certain. And so what we would do is make sure that encompasses enough time period for the studies to be in and for them to see the
should we reach that date certain and we're not there, we can continue it.
That's right.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, on that discussion.
Thank you.
Mike, anyone find out?
No, I think it actually is fairly simple.
Well, I got 5 minutes of questions in the open.
Uh-oh. So this is something that we want to
didn't come to the Park and Recreation Commission meeting.
Mike's problem here is I was on that commission.
So the reason I did want to introduce this now is we do want to have a joint meeting at your February 28th. It's your second meeting in February, jointly with the Parks Commission. To hold a public hearing, so I wanted to do a good introduction to you now so that you're ready for that then. And then we'd hope to get your joint recommendation from the Parks Commission and the Planning Commission following that public hearing on these amendments. If that's too ambitious, I think the public hearing hasn't been scheduled yet, so we can bump it back. But in terms of trying to keep on track with our calendar for the Planning Commission, it might be nice to be able to do that. So a lot of this started with some direction from council members looking at, as development has occurred, what do our parks, or our private parks, parks within homeowners association tracts and so forth within subdivisions, look like. And some of them have been developed with stormwater features or floodplain compensatory storage areas within those parks, which really diminishes their utility as parks. It's kind of hard to play in a pretty wet, muddy area. And so we opened up our parks and recreation standards to address that issue and did some additional cleanup while we were in there, providing some, broadening out the idea of children's play equipment that it doesn't necessarily have to be just the typical plastic playground, but it could be natural features designed for kids' interactive play, providing some discretion to council about whether or not they want to take a park that's greater than 2.5 acres. Right now, the standards say that the city does take that as a city park if it's over 2.5, but council has said, well, there are certain circumstances where that might not be in the best interest of the public.
Is that like side view estates for that beautiful
space? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a gorgeous park.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the town.
Mm-hmm.
I just see us not having more of that if we could do it.
Another thing is regarding how the acreage is counted, or the park requirement is counted for subdivisions. Currently, it says either based on the number of dwelling units or the size of the underlying property. So those can be in conflict depending on the number of units and the size of the property. So it's better just to have one standard, and we feel like the dwelling unit standard is a better metric because we know how many people are going to be there, whereas if it's based on area, you could wind up with just, like in the constrained low density residential zone, not very many homes in a huge amount of area. Other things are just some general cleanup to address provisions that really aren't applicable or addressed by other sections of code, such as lighting, soil permeability, stormwater control, etc. Let's leave those to the right tool, which are other sections of code. And then also regarding trails, the council wanted to give direction that we want to have wider trails on certain primary corridors like the Tanner Trail. Right now it's 8-foot standard. We want to expand that to the 10-foot standard because that allows us eligibility for certain grants from the state that we're not eligible for if we use 8 feet. And then also lighting on the Tanner Trail to provide eventual better public safety and visibility along that corridor.
It can be quite expensive if you have a mid-slope trail that you have to widen by 2 feet. All that fill goes into this can be...
So this wouldn't be necessarily widening what's already constructed, but as new trails are constructed, that they have been...
We've lost a lot of opportunities to get a fair amount of money because we didn't meet a standard.
Sounds like we're talking about certain select more regional or citywide trails, right?
Right.
Still within the 12-foot overall?
Yeah. It's the same corridor width, but the trail would go from 8-foot to 10 feet. And that's just for the primary trail, not for every connection.
And given the use that you'll have in the future and that you do when the weather is good, you want to be able to have safe both directions trail. We had a really robust trail program at Folsom. It got to be that we needed directional signs and all kinds of stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We had people riding, you know, some people get their spandex on. They think they're in the Tour de France, and they go riding down the trail at 40 miles an hour. We had a fireman that got hit, and he no longer works. He had brain injury from it. But we had a person that was in a home group that I attended at church that got hit, and she's had problems for the last 5 years from it. So, you know, the safety on trails will eventually become a concern here.
Yeah. But that's the quick and dirty introduction. So we'll bring this back to you.
So am I presuming you're be inviting maybe some feedback by email?
Sure, certainly, yeah.
I don't recall, you know, what came up. Was this sent in PDF or Word doc?
I
could redline it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we could extend 15 minutes and go through and give them to you in person, or, yeah, I think we could end it right now. We've got an Oscar
chair. I'll go more than 15 minutes
okay.
on this topic.
Yeah.
So
that'll learn.
Yeah. So if I could, I will just say
that. If you ever wanted to stop early, say, I'll buy you whiskey over there.
Sold. But I do want to offer, while we're together, before you see my comments come back, just so you understand where I'm coming from philosophically, is that I and Mike knows this well, we've worked together so long, but I'm looking a lot at the balance between a city's obligations to its citizens at large and the that smaller, more contiguous neighborhood, and you know, that we generally think of as a subdivision, you know, like think of Cedar Falls or something like that, right? And
are you running for office?
And this goes to funding and equitable care, right? And so that's going to flavor a lot of the comments you're going to see from me, because I think that we've gone too far pushing the burden onto an HOA for what is a city park. And so that's what you're going to see flavored in to some of my comments. And some of it has to do with what GMA is asking us to do and where I see this somewhat conflicting with that. And so that's a little bit of what you're going to be seeing. I just wanted to get that on the table.
Well, the reason for that, I think, is as you grow, you have more resources. You can fund the frosting, so always the parks, right?
I think it is a shifting of city tax obligation. I'll put that out there. Right? We look for a lot of opportunity to not increase taxes, which all of us like, but we fail to recognize that everything needs to be paid for, and therefore these things end up the obligation of the HOA. So the individual homeowner is still paying for it, and in many cases, appropriately allocated as they should be. Specific to that community, great. But where these things start, in my mind, to cross the line and be more of a community asset than a neighborhood, that's what I'm bringing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think with our comments, I would say just go ahead and send them to the whole Planning Commission.
That's
I know that
what I'd like to do.
Yeah, no, people haven't done that in general because I haven't seen a lot of reply alls like that, but I think that's just a good way to do it. What's that?
We're not supposed to do, right? We're
not yeah.
supposed
not
to
communicate
each other
back and forth, but if you send it.
Reply alls, yeah,
right.
would be a problem.
If you just send it, say, here's my comments
okay.
for discussion at the meeting.
Okay. Not reply alls, not
yeah,
what I
yeah.
meant, but just send it to Mike. It's addressed to Mike, but the Planning Commission can even be CC'd, but just so that.
And the comments that I get from you, I'll also forward to the Parks Commission because they'll be at the meeting and you could have them.
On just the technical piece of the email, I know that when I have sent or attempted to hit a reply all, we have a PC group, right? And I get a bounce from that. It won't accept. I'm not sure. And I couldn't honestly say if I'm replying from my personal or from my city account, but it seemed to me that I got a bounce from that. So just as a warning.
Yeah, I think you'd probably be, it would probably, at least from a technical perspective, I'd do it from your city account.
From the city.
Because
yeah.
if you don't have a listing of those folks that are in your contacts, that'll happen. So
yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's what's happening.
And that's maybe what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We have a motion to adjourn.
We adjourn.
Second. Yeah, second, for sure, Farland. All right. All those in favor of adjourning tonight's meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah. So,
you going to go out and listen?
Actually, I want to come in here. Actually, I'm there. There's huge.